From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made on December 8th in Maynardville, Tennessee, when an 11-year-old boy tearfully asked his mother, quote, "Why do they bully?" In a video that has gone viral, Keaton Jones described how his classmates bullied him in the lunchroom, calling him ugly, pouring milk on him, and shoving ham down his clothes. At the end of the video, he says softly, quote, "It will probably get better one day." In the week since Keaton's mother posted that video on Facebook, it has garnered more than 20 million views, and people across the world, including a number of celebrities, have sent words of encouragement to Keaton. There are other layers to the stories, maybe you've heard. Photos have emerged of Keaton and his family posing with Confederate flags. His mother has insisted that she is not racist and that the photos of her with those flags were meant to be ironic. She has since apologized for the pictures. Multiple sources have also reported that Keaton's biological father is a white supremacist. But there's no evidence to suggest that Keaton was bullied because he espoused racism. And many people following the story have advised critics not to hold an 11-year-old accountable for his family's actions. The focus is on the epidemic of bullying, and that's the focus of our conversation this hour. Keaton Jones is one of 28% of students in grades 6 through 12 who have been bullied. That's data from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. In recent weeks, several young people have taken their own lives after being bullied, including 10-year-old Ashanti Davis in Colorado, who hanged herself after a video of a fight she was involved in was posted on an app, and 13-year-old Rosalie Avila of California, who reportedly committed suicide after being bullied for having braces. This hour, we're discussing why kids bully, how children who are bullied can cope, and what parents and schools can do to help end this epidemic. I'd like to welcome my guests. Jordan Duby is a survivor of bullying and a wilderness educator who has been working with children for 10 years. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Miranda Kologi is a parent whose son was bullied. Welcome to you, Miranda.
Thank you.
Ellie Wilkos is the clinical director of the Healing Connection. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Brenda McQuillan is an assistant professor of social work at Roberts Wesleyan College and a mental health therapist at Justice for Children's Advocacy Center. Welcome to you, Brenda.
Thank you.
We have a lot of ground to cover this hour, but I'd like to start by listening to that video of Keaton Jones. He asked his mother, or he says he asked his mother to record this after she picked him up from school early because he says he was afraid to go to lunch. So you're about to hear sixth grader Keaton Jones describing how he was bullied.
Just out of curiosity, why do they bully? What's the point of it? Why do you find joy in taking innocent people and finding a way to be mean to them? It's not okay.
What do they say to you?
They make fun of my nose. They call me ugly. They say I have no friends.
What'd they do to you at lunch?
Put milk on me and put ham down my clothes. Threw bread at me.
Is it just you?
Yep.
Or is it other kids too that feel that way?
Say it's other kids too.
How's that make you feel?
I don't like that they do it to me, and I for sure don't like that they do it to other people, because it's not okay. People that are different don't need to be criticized about it, because it's not their fault. But if you are made fun of, just don't let it bother you. Just stay strong, I guess. It's hard. But it'll probably get better one day.
So again, that's the video of Keaton Jones in Tennessee. He's 11 years old in sixth grade, a very emotional video that his mother recorded and posted to Facebook. Jordan, you were a victim of bullying. Hearing that video, how do you react to Keaton and what he was expressing?
Yeah, that's, brought back all kinds of memories. It's actually really difficult to hear, too, just because I have PTSD from bullying and, I don't know, brought some rough stuff back.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to share any of the experiences you had? And I don't know how old you were when you were bullied, but it seems that the statistics I read at the top of the hour, 28% of students in grades 6 through 12 say that they've experienced bullying. I'm sure that number has fluctuated throughout the years, but as you were going through school, did you find that the situations in which you were bullied got better or worse?
It's really hard, actually, for me to remember those moments. There's a giant blank spot of memories from most of my childhood. What I can tell you about my memories is probably around 10 or 11th grade, I had to write an assignment on my happiest memory. And all I could think to do was how terrifying the assignment was. And I wrote about a flashback without ever realizing what I was having were flashbacks, about reliving memories, about having these memories come back and feel like they're happening again. I don't have the specifics for what happened to me anymore as an adult. That entire period of my childhood is about gone.
Turning to you, Brenda, is that common among bullying victims that just those negative instances are blocked out because they were so traumatic?
Absolutely. Some people that have experienced victimization from bullying definitely will result with symptoms of PTSD. And that's why I like to call bullying a peer abuse, so that it can receive the same type of attention as domestic abuse, as other types of violence, interpersonal violence, because that's what it is, and it results in the same kind of consequences.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, as the parent of a child who was bullied, how do you react upon hearing Keaton's video?
Well, I purposely avoided that video last week, and whenever it came out, I did not want to watch it. That's heartbreaking, and no child should ever have to feel like that. And to think that, I mean, my child has felt like that, and, you know, we are now taking steps to ensure that that feeling doesn't stay with him, that he learns how to cope with that, and then he also learns strategies how to get over it. But wow, that poor baby, 11 years old, that's, ugh.
How old is your son?
Jude is 10. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking a little before the hour began about when bullying started for him. It started at a pretty young age.
Yep. It was as soon as he started at daycare. He was 3 years old, and he had long golden ringlets, and he was just like this beautiful little sun child. And as soon as he got into school, him being the youngest also, some of the older kids were like, "You're a girl." And he's like, "No, I'm a boy." But it didn't end there, and it just kept on going. And he was often, you know, made fun of for certain things, like he chose to wear nail polish, and he would marker all over himself. And he'd be like, "I'm a superhero," and he'd be so excited going in, walking into school, and then he'd be like, "Well, that kind of wasn't okay." And, you know, you can't really explain to a kid, you know, they're just mean. And also, I feel like a big mistake that I made was telling him, like, he wasn't allowed to use words to describe somebody as ugly or fat. He wasn't allowed to call anybody stupid or an idiot, and shut up was a bad word in our house. So I feel like I took away tools for him to defend himself at that age level. Hmm. And then I guess we could go to the reasoning of bullying, but we can, like,
no, you're leading
okay,
my
cool.
transition.
Thank you. All right, great. So when he entered pre-K, he was with the same kids, and one of the kids that kept on doing it, I noticed from the year that he wasn't getting hugged when he got dropped off or when he got picked up. And when I would drop off and pick up my child, it was, you know, a reunion. "Oh, I'm so glad. Like, tell me about your day." And I noticed that that child watched that interaction that I had with my child. So I asked the director of the daycare center if it would be okay if I hugged that child, hello and goodbye. And she thought that it would be a really great idea. And so when I went to pick him up, I asked the little boy, like, "Hey, you know what? You know, when I come in, do you want me to give you a hug? Can I give you a hug and a kiss when I come in and see you?" And he was just like, "Yes." And immediately hugged me really tight and fiercely, and I gave him a kiss, and that became our routine. And through that, he became Jude's companion, and also stood up for Jude when other kids weren't being very friendly.
Mm, I love that story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that does factor into the question of why do kids bully? And Ellie, I know that the population that you are dealing with, those are people who are struggling with mental health issues and eating disorders. And let's focus on that for a moment. Why do you think that those kids are targeted, especially at school? Why is weight such a factor in bullying? And do most bullies know that some people are struggling with eating disorders if they're picking on them for their weight?
Right. I think weight has just become a culturally safe thing to bully people about and to talk about, and it's reinforced in the media, it's reinforced on television and movies. You just mentioned the word fat, so it simply comes up as a really sort of elementary type of way to put somebody down or to notice that they're different than the others. So I think that even kids, they're not even quite sure what that means or what they are saying. But when you are actually struggling possibly with a weight issue, you know what that means. So you're taking it to heart and you're automatically assigning a value to it. So if you are of a particular weight, then you are less valuable, you have less to offer, you're less capable. And because kids don't realize, obviously, the impact of their words, it starts really early on, you know, things like stupid, fat, dumb, those are the kind of your first line courses. So whether or not, I don't believe that they have the capacity to understand how that could develop into a full-blown eating disorder or mental health issue, but it certainly is something that's become all too commonplace. And I hear it, I'm particularly sensitive to it, so I hear it all the time on the radio, and I hear it all the time on TV, and it's I hear my kids say that out loud, and it's become in my house a no-way word. Mm-hmm. And I think it needs to become that way everywhere. It's kind of, people's weight have been the one thing left that is okay to mention and talk about. And mm-hmm. so a lot needs to be changed on that level. So, mm-hmm.
Brenda, when we talk about the underlying reasons for bullying, 30% of kids saying, I have bullied someone at school, they admit to it. What are some of those primary reasons? Does it relate to what Miranda was saying, just feeling, not feeling love at home, bringing that into other situations? Tell us about what some of those motivations might be.
Well, through the research that I've done, I've noticed that there's three different types of kids that will bully, one of which is the type that was mentioned earlier, and those are the kids that aren't receiving the love and support at home. Maybe they've been bullied themselves and they're acting out what they've learned, but really just negative experiences that they are in turn, it's something they've learned that they're acting out against. Another type of kid that will bully is those that just really enjoy the power and control over others. And these kids typically are the very well socially adjusted to their peers and to their social network. And they may actually even be the popular kids, the kids that the teachers love. But there's something about that control and power over someone else that they really love. And then the third type of kid that will bully is just a good kid that makes a bad mistake. Mm-hmm. And those are the kids that are easiest to work with, because most often when they are informed of the impact of their actions on someone else, their behavior will change and they show remorse and regret for what they did. And then they think twice before they do it again.
Do you think most kids realize that they're bullies? What's the percentage, do you think, just broad overall picture of kids who know that they are being mean on purpose? And other kids who, like you just said, they made a bad choice, they made a mistake, and once it's brought to their attention, they think, oh, I shouldn't act that way.
I think that for those that are the chronic aggressors, that they know what they're doing, and that they would identify as such out of pride, honestly. But that would just be that one type of aggressor that I had mentioned before, not the one that's acting out what they've learned or the one that is just making a bad choice, but that child that enjoys that power and control. And that percentage, I would imagine, would be much lower. For the research that I did, it was down around 15% instead of up around 30.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, I know you were very honest about some of the experiences you had growing up and how you described yourself as a bully. Do you think you knew you were a bully at the time?
Well, I knew that I was being cruel, but I wouldn't have considered myself a bully because it wasn't something that I did repeatedly on an everyday ongoing basis. Or I have also blocked that, you know, which I think that is also kind of possible. And it's something that makes me feel bad to this day, some of the things. You know, I wonder if I encounter a certain person in my adult world, you know, how do you go up to them and say, you know, I'm really sorry that I made you feel so badly at such a critical time in your life of self-esteem growth. But I mean, you don't really realize that. Some of it was sticking up for myself, but most of it was because I wanted to be popular. Mm-hmm. But I recognize that now, like, oh, I'm getting along with these kids and these kids are mean, so I'm going to do this mean thing too. Or I see this opportunity to make people laugh at the expense of others. So I'm in the third category of the good kids.
I think, too, that some kids will bully others because they're afraid of being the next target or victim themselves. So it's easier and safer, especially in middle school years, where the number one goal is to fit in and to not be different, because being different makes you an easier target. Mm-hmm. So to join the bully is safer than to align with the victim or to stand up for the victim, because then you're at risk of, you know, being the next target yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, you can join this conversation by calling 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can also email your experiences or any questions you have about bullying to connections@WXXI.org. And you can also find me on Twitter at MMacMedia. So one thing I'd like to talk about is that multiple sources have reported that Keaton never complained to a teacher about being bullied because he was afraid that the bullies would, quote, for sure attack. Mm-hmm. And similar reports coming from the family of Ashanti Davis, the school that she attended, they said they weren't aware that she was being bullied. Brenda, is that common? Do bullying victims tend to hold back for fear of retaliation?
Absolutely. They absolutely won't tell. And that's a roadblock that teachers find. You know, they will ask me, how can we intervene if we don't know that this is happening? Or sometimes kids will tell their parents that it's happening and the parents will assume that the school knows when in fact the school has no idea. Because the kids that are bullying often are really good at it. And so the teachers assume it's not happening in their classroom. Maybe it's happening in the bathroom or on the bus where there's no supervision. But in fact, it is happening right in the classroom. They're just skillful at it so that the teacher doesn't always recognize. Kids are afraid of retaliation, so they will not tell. And in today's world of cyberbullying, kids won't tell because they're afraid their electronics will be taken away from them as a safety precaution. And as we know, teenagers use their tools, their electronic devices to communicate and to be connected with their peers. And so they're very fearful of that being taken away, so they won't tell for that concern.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's easier to... regarding cyberbullying, when you're anonymous or you're posting something online, you're not confronting a person face-to-face, you're probably more apt to say something that you wouldn't if you were sitting across the table from this person like we are now. Jordan, you were probably bullied before social media exploded, but mm-hmm. did you ever report being bullied when you were in school?
Yes, I think. I remember, again, memories are hard to come by with this, but... I remember telling my parents that I was unhappy. I came home in tears a lot of the days. I think in ninth grade it got so bad I would just cry in the middle of class. Couldn't stop it at that point.
Did the teacher notice that you were upset?
Oh, yeah. No, I was asked to leave when that happened. It's really embarrassing. I asked to leave.
Oh, you asked to leave.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it was really embarrassing because I was crying for no reason at that point and just it wouldn't stop. So I would ask to use a bathroom or whatever and just take a moment to... gather myself.
Did your teacher ever come to you and say, hey, what's going on? How can I help you?
Not as much as you'd expect they would. I never felt like I had enough support as a kid. I didn't feel like there were really any tools. I talked with a guidance counselor a lot in sixth grade, and I don't know if anything ever really came of that. It's strange, as an educator now, I work on the other side of that, and I recognize that the kids don't see all the things I do behind the scenes for them, and I kind of wonder if there was a lot of that going on that I just wasn't aware of, or if there really wasn't anything happening. So it's really hard to say.
I think that's very true. Because of confidentiality reasons, often the school cannot tell the parents of the target what has occurred in terms of consequences. And I always tell parents to be patient because oftentimes school officials will hope that the aggressor that they're dealing with is the type that will learn and feel remorse from their behavior. So they may address them one time with a warning, but then if it continues, the target, the victim that shared their story, feels like, oh, well, I shared my story and nothing happened. Whereas in reality, the school may give a warning the first time and then a more serious consequence the second time and then an extreme consequence the third time. And it's just a progression that needs to happen because they're hopeful that the intervention will bring about a remorse and a change in behavior. And when it doesn't, that's when you lead to the more severe consequences. Of course, if it's a very severe incident of bullying, then you skip those first couple steps and you go straight to an extreme consequence.
Mm-hmm. Allie, what are you hearing from the people that you're working with regarding, are they speaking up about being bullied and how are people responding if they are?
I think I'm hearing a lot of the not speaking up part of it. So there's a lot of shame and embarrassment already that's starting to build inside for being bullied, and then to almost go ahead and admit that and say out loud that I'm a victim of this, that someone is more powerful than I am, that someone is cooler than I am, that type of thing. They're very hesitant to say that, and the cyberbullying piece really comes into play a lot with the population that we work with because they're just on 24/7. So they're able to be bullied 24/7. And so there's just, they talk about different apps that are used and things of that nature. And then they don't want to come out and tell their parents exactly what you said. They don't want to lose their phone. If they lose their phone, then they become a victim of another type of bullying, which is more isolative and just not inclusion. So it's, I think I'm hearing a lot of what is being said. And we see it when it's gotten to the point that it's causing impairment in everyday living.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. So the impairment in everyday living, what are some of the day-to-day takeaways that come from being bullied? And Miranda, I'm sure you went through some of those things with Jude, mm-hmm. especially it started at age 3, mm-hmm. you said, and is it still an issue for him? Is he still struggling?
So it's much less of an issue. One of his primary bullies actually was not allowed back into the school, but it took a very long time for that to happen. And I did see my child's self-esteem dwindle, and I saw stomach aches and... You know, we tried so many different ways to encourage him to stand up for himself or ignore it or tell a teacher, but he definitely feared retaliation, and also nothing was happening. So there wasn't any consequences, so Jude didn't feel supported. He was supported at home, but I can't be there at school with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you were talking about the consequences, I was like, yeah, I want to see them. I want to know what is happening to that kid who hurt my child. I feel like I have the right to know. And what he's dealing with now is more of a child that is an incredibly endearing human. Like, I think he's a funny kid, but I'm liking him less because he's kind of mean to my kid sometimes. But he definitely has, like, oppositional defiant disorder, has been on ADHD meds, you know, since kindergarten. This is a different child. So, you know, I know that there are things in place to try to help his behavior. But at the same time, I can no longer feel compassion for anybody else's child because it's taking away having compassion for my own mm-hmm. child. Mm-hmm. So, uh-huh. you know, and then they can work together and they can do a team building exercise where they make leaves on a tree, but this kid is still denying that he did anything wrong. So where's the lesson in that?
Mm-hmm. I think that some of those kind of activities are misguided too, though, mm-hmm. because with bullying, there's a power differential. And so you need adult intervention. So when in bullying situations, kids are encouraged to come together and work through like peer mediation or conflict resolution, that's not effective with bullying. There needs to be mm-hmm. adult implemented consequences yes. mm-hmm. put in place.
I mean, I think that it comes from a place of fear. Like, you know, the bully needs to fear getting in trouble by an adult. When I got yelled at for being mean and the things that I was doing that were mean, I was also embarrassed, which I don't feel as though, like, humiliating a child is a good way to enforce positive behavior with things like doing homework or putting your stuff together or putting your stuff away. But, you know, making that bully feel embarrassed about their actions is, I think, an effective way, especially with females where the bullying is completely different and often so destroying. I saw like a week-long retreat for women to be able to go back to the child that they were before they went through, you know, the destruction of themselves through middle school and puberty and, you know, how women had brought them down during that time.
I'm seeing the phone starting to ring. Listeners, you can join this conversation, share your stories, ask any questions you have about bullying. The number is 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Up first on the phones is Kim. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
So I wanted to share an experience. I got bullied a lot as a kid, and one of the scenarios was my parents lived on a busy street where we didn't have sidewalks, and the closest was a side street nearby. And we would ride our bikes down it, but a couple of the kids on the street would physically assault us and bully us. They would throw things at us. They would grab our bikes and take the handlebar things off, like the little streamers, and poke nails and pins into our bike tires, and their parents were there. they were sitting on the stoop, or, you know, one of them, I vividly remember holding her baby, watching her adult, well, not adult children, but, you know, older kids attacking us, and said nothing, did nothing. And it became a thing where I would try to draw the attention so that my younger sisters would be spared. And we told our parents, and our parents walked down the street trying to talk to the other parents. The other parents wouldn't talk to them. They would not acknowledge any wrongdoing of their kids when my parents could show the physical damage to our bikes. And it became a situation of, did my parents allow us to go down a side street that was safe as far as traffic is concerned, but not safe because of the people on it? And this is in a suburb, you know, like it's not in a bad neighborhood. And they, we ended up having to basically play in our yard, and we were stuck there a lot during the summer while this was perpetuating.
So Kim, nothing ever came of that. Then that situation never resolved itself. Those parents never addressed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We just had to wait for them to move away.
Wow. Brenda,
Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the parents are the problem. Mm. Like, they're not helping. They don't want to help. And I don't know what to do in a situation like that, because it's almost like they're taught that behavior and no one can undo it, I feel, because it's just perpetuated at home and encouraged almost by not being reprimanded.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Thank you. Thanks, Kim. Thanks for that call. Ellie and Brenda, how do you handle situations like that in which parents clearly recognize that there's a problem, but don't do anything about it?
I think that a lot of times going to the parents of the bully or of the child engaging in bullying behaviors just backfires. And often getting support from school or law enforcement officials can be more beneficial, because this falls into the category of that one type of aggressor who comes from a background where this is learned behavior. I mean, this is social learning theory in effect, and these kids are learning that behavior from their parents, and therefore going to the parents will be in denial of the behavior, or they will reinforce the behavior of the child. So look for a different route to address it and build up those supports around the target to try to protect them in any sort of way possible.
What would you recommend? Because I have a lot of questions about the unintended consequences of anti-bullying efforts and how victims should respond. But in that case, when you're saying use other methods, what are some of those methods that might be effective?
First of all, I think that we put too much pressure on the targets, and we give them words of advice and tools to use that they have already been using. Mm-hmm. We tell them to ignore the aggressor. They've already done that. We tell them to, think positive self-talk and a lot of different things we're telling them they're already doing. And so they feel defeated when they hear advice from us about things that are failing for them. The best way that I have found to combat bullying behavior is to tap into the bystanders. Those youth that are there, that witness it, that see it, and don't do anything out of fear of being the next target themselves or of just a lack of knowledge and skills. And if we can wrap those bystanders around with different skills, then they can, in fact, intervene. And they don't have to go up to the aggressor and, you know, stand up and speak out against the aggressor. They can just offer support and care for the target so that that person doesn't feel alone and isolated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jordan, I know that you work with kids every day, and you have, based on your experience, you're able to bring them a different perspective, and you have a number of techniques that you use in these situations.
Yeah. It's always tough, I think, with each individual kid who's doing any sort of bullying behavior. I have to change my tactics because it's coming from different places in their lives. One of my main go-tos, though, is to try to give them a positive sense of power, just a different outlet for them to have that own sense of personal fulfillment, so they're not reaching out and hurting someone else so that they can, you know, feel that sense of power, that sense of control in their lives. I'm not sure if I have any specifics offhand because, like I said, it's something that varies from kid to kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I've given kids jobs in the classroom, like, you're responsible for helping me make sure that all the kids are lining up properly.
So you're talking about kids who are the bullies. You're
mm-hmm.
okay.
Yeah, and I usually when I do that, it's, you know, I watch them like a hawk, make sure they're not being mean about it, because sometimes they will be. They'll fall back into that behavior of knowing this is how I get people to do what I want. And then, you know, pull them aside, like, hey, let's try it like this instead, and it can be helpful. It doesn't always work, and if it doesn't work, I tried something new. It's always a challenge, I think. Other times I find something they're really good at and just focus in on that. Let them talk about it to me and just say, hey, this is something I'm passionate about. And I think that's me as a teacher. I think that's really cool that you're doing that. And let's focus on that. Let's make that the thing that you enjoy, your sense of personal power. Let's rock that instead of you being mean to someone else as your sense of personal power. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's tough, but I do think it's important to focus on the bullies a little bit when you're dealing with these kinds of behaviors, just because they're the ones who are causing it in many ways. And you can tell a victim only so many things to make them feel better, but there's really only so much to do when you're being victimized. So I try to stop those problems on the other half of things.
I really like that. And I'd like to use that as well. Kids who bully have great leadership skills. Mm-hmm. So why not tap into them and build them up in a way mm-hmm. that they can use them in a pro-social positive mm-hmm. manner?
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Ellie, are you ever working with students who are bullying, the population that you work with on a daily basis? Do you ever have the opportunity to go into classrooms or schools and talk about how to overcome some of those issues?
I haven't had it, but this conversation is making me want to. for sure, I think that when you are the bully or the aggressor, you're not necessarily, by the time, again, where we're meeting them, they're not necessarily coming out and talking about that. It's just at that point, they're already feeling ashamed and embarrassed of what they've done and maybe the consequences they've felt from that. So I think this is certainly something that should get more attention, and it already is, so that's a good thing to know. But I was also thinking about the parent piece and the piece of the denial that parents have around their children being the bully and how denial is a main defense. And so, again, kind of would love to work a little bit with parents and coming alongside them and rolling with their resistance towards recognizing what their kids might or might not be up to and empowering them a little bit, too, because I feel like maybe mm-hmm. at that point they've heard it so much that they start to get defensive or start to feel helpless themselves. And I think a lot of the connections can happen in the home to then let that roll into their children and empower them. Mm-hmm.
It's something I've noticed, too, whenever I talk with parents about any sort of behavior that's bad. And, you know, every child I've worked with has moments where I'm like, dude, not cool. but, you know, they are children that we're working with, regardless of if they're doing something really awful or if they're being victimized. Kids don't really know how to handle these moments. They're learning. That's part of the process of developing. So even if they're doing these bad things, I always try to make sure that I'm making clear to the child, to parents, to teachers, to anyone involved that I'm speaking with that I don't think these kids are bad people because, mm-hmm. you know, they're kids. A lot of them are just trying to figure things out in a way, and they found something they've liked that works, and that might not be healthy for them. It might not be healthy for the kids around them. And it's worth keeping in mind that no matter how bad things are getting I don't want to say across the board, but almost across the board, kids are innocent, and they deserve that benefit of the doubt that we can talk to them and make them understand that what they're doing isn't okay, and it's painful, and people are being hurt by it. And I think Miranda talked about that earlier, and I think it's great that you went up to a kid who was hurting your own son and said, no, you deserve support and love, too. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, we saw positive results from that, so I think that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. We are late for our only break of the hour, so we will do that, and we'll continue this conversation about bullying. When we come back, I see some phone calls starting to come in. Richard and Greece, hang on the line for me. Dan and Brighton, stay right there. We'll be right back. And when we do come back, I would like our guests to listen to a video about victims responding and some research that I've read about effective ways to do that. So we'll get their opinions about that. We'll also take more of your calls. More Connections is next. Coming up in our second hour, we'll have some fun talking about books. We're continuing an annual Connections tradition where we talk about Rochester and Western New York's favorite books of 2017. Not necessarily books that were published this year, but any book that you read that stood out to you. We'll hear from a number of people in our community and from you. Feel free to call the show or email us. That's next on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're having a conversation about the epidemic of bullying, and I'd like to thank all my guests for being here and sharing their personal stories and their thoughts and their research. Jordan Duby is a survivor of bullying and a wilderness educator. He's been working with kids for 10 years. What's a wilderness educator, Jordan?
I basically take groups of kids out into the woods and try to get them more comfortable in an environment that they're usually not used to. I teach them wilderness skills like shelter building, fire making, all that sort of fun stuff.
Great. That's awesome. And I know that some of the things that you're doing create opportunities for coping skills.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the woods are great. It's basically an opportunity to be uncomfortable and in a situation you don't want to be in necessarily. If it's cold, if it's wet, if it's rainy, and you're stuck out there, you kind of sort of have to learn how to be comfortable and even enjoy your time out there regardless. And it's one of those, it's one of the reasons I think debriefing whenever I do a lesson is really important, because I get to remind them that, hey, you didn't have a good time today, but you still had a good time. And that's, it's powerful, I think.
I also think it probably creates opportunities for students to rely on each other and maybe, I hope, break down some of those barriers that might exist between bullies and victims. Have you seen any of that happening?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of one of the nice parts about creating a sort of, I don't know the word for it, just a situation that's not necessarily ideal for everyone involved, that everyone sort of kind of bands together and says, we all have to get through this, and if someone's not having a good time, there's usually a child who will go over there and say, like, hey, let's work together, because I'm not having a good time either. Like, this is, it's a nice ability for people to, I'm making it sound like I'm putting these kids through a horrible time.
No. It's outdoor education.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it gives them the opportunity to work with one another and sort of find companionship in, you know, a new skill that they're not used to. And I think that's very, very valuable for kids to have.
Listeners, we'll start taking some of your phone calls, because almost every line is lit up, and we have a new phone system that has even more lines than the old one. So thank you all for calling. First up on the phones is Richard in Greece. Hi, Richard.
Well, thank you for taking my call. It's a very important program, and I you know, thank all your guests and your experts. You know, it's hard to approach the problem of bullying without having some standards. We don't know what a standard bully is. We don't know what a standard victim is, you know, the aspects of them, their self-esteem, their self-respect levels. We don't know any of that, but if we could use a social model, what would be an appropriate social model to follow, regardless of the environment or the circumstance of the bullying or the degree? So we have standards. Teachers are responsible to maintain order in the classroom, so there should be no bullying happening in the classroom. Let me use an example, if I might, of my brother. His son, Ethan, who's at this point in life, is a very successful person. When he was in high school, there was a boy that was bullying him. So it's important for children and the bully, everyone, to know that we're not just individuals. We're part of a social structure. So rather than give Ethan cues and pep talks and camping and all these other things, which he actually had had. He was a very brilliant, reliant, self-reliant child. He came to his dad, who he trusted, and they said, let's talk with the other parents, because the child is an extension, the bully is an extension of his parents. And so they met at school, they had a meeting, and they let everyone know that we're all playing on a level playing field, and put everything out on the table, and have a couple of discussions, a couple of meetings, and coming up with understandings and resolutions. Well, people say, well, that's idealistic. Well, no, it's a social model. This is how we expect society to operate. Why is that unrealistic? And as it turns out, that boy turned out to be one of Ethan's very best friends through the rest of high school and continues a relationship with him, not on what was done, but how it was done, the sensitivities, the pure intelligence of the solution. So I encourage parents to always as often happens, the victim is always blamed, or we put it on the victim to solve the problem. And it's really, that child is a part of society. And he's, so we all need to stick together and work together and use the tools that are available to us, and not invent new tools and experiment on our child. Let's see, let's tell the kid to punch the kid back. Well, no, that's the most horrible advice you could give.
Okay, so, thanks, Richard. I'm just going to jump in so our guests have a chance to respond. You gave us a lot of good things to work with there. Thank you. Brenda, what do you think about some of Richard's thoughts?
Well, I definitely think we need to reflect on the social model when looking at bullying. And I think one key factor that possibly made that situation successful is the incorporation of the school as a mediator. Mm-hmm. I think if parents go directly to other parents without some sort of neutral ground to mediate that process, it could backfire and turn into a negative situation. But I'm pleased to hear that this situation turned out very positively, and I do think that having the school involved possibly is a contributing factor to that. But I will reflect back on the incorporation of the bystanders in terms of the social model. And I put responsibility on, as a mom, I put responsibility on my children to look for those kids that are ostracized or left out or being teased and picked on, and to reach out to them. They have a responsibility as a member of society to help those kids out. And I want them to be upstanders, not just bystanders witnessing.
So. Here's a little pushback from a school psychologist named Izzy Kalman. This is in a blog post that he published last week in Psychology Today. He argues that most schools' mandated processes for dealing with bullying often perpetuate the problem. And he says, quote, intervention is not a neutral process. In some cases, the school's intervention will succeed in resolving the problem, but if it doesn't make it better, it will probably make it worse. Both sides get angrier with each other. The alleged bullies get angry at the school for taking their alleged victim's side against them, and they feel justified in continuing to torment the alleged victims for getting them in trouble. Allie, how do you... Are you dealing with any of that with your, some of the cases dealing with especially mental health issues?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think there's pieces of that that are very true. And so we were talking a bit to that before in regards to the outcomes of reporting and then having schools intervene with ineffective methods to have the children repair the disconnected relationship. I'm not quite sure that having the schools intervene at that level would be good. I'm thinking more along the lines of schools could do more preventatively too, you know, and have classes focused on kindness and diversity and helping, and a little bit, you know, maybe less on calculus or things that aren't so much used in everyday life. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, in regards to specific interventions, maybe backfiring, of course, that's the risk. So we had a positive situation from the caller, and then we've had several negative in which you become more ostracized and made fun of because you told your parents, and then your parents told the school, and then you become that person in the school. So we've had several children or young adults who have had to transfer school several times to try to find a place. Mm-hmm. But then every time you go to school, you're the new kid and you're a victim of that type of bullying. So it would be nice to have some more effective methods.
I'll say it's really, really hard as an educator to know what to do and what the correct solution is. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, I mean, there have absolutely been times I've failed. And it's a heartbreaking feeling to know that I've made a situation worse or at the very least didn't do anything that was helpful. But, you know, in regards to that, there are kids who, if a kid is being bullied, sometimes the kid who's being bullied acts out back. I've seen, you know, a kid take a swing at another kid because he was being bullied, and I have to talk to both of them now because another child is hurt. And, you know, I'm definitely going to speak with the person who started it a little bit more intensely, but it's definitely tricky. It's not an easy thing to tackle.
Allie, you mentioned kids transferring schools, and this reminded me of a story that's coming out of Florida this month. There is proposed legislation that would allow victims of bullying to move to private schools. So they could get state-backed scholarships to go to a private school of their choice starting next year if that legislation does move through. But it leads me to the question, why are we asking victims to adapt? Why are we not addressing the problem with bullies? Why are we saying, oh, I'm sorry that you're being bullied at school. We're going to move you to a new school so you can get away from that. That's not addressing the root of the problem. Miranda, I see you're frustrated by that.
I just think that it's going to end up being a mess of people potentially saying, well, I'm a victim. And I don't even like that word victim. I don't like victim culture. And with parental involvement, I've been denied meeting with other parents and their children. And I think that it would be effective because my participation in the school and the classroom from Jude being from a little age, that I feel like they'll understand and they'll talk to me and come to an agreement. But at the same time, since I haven't been granted those meetings, I have told Jude, well, you know what? I'm going to find out where they live. And if this continues, I'm going to go talk to their parents. And if it doesn't work, we're going to send Daddy there in his uniform because he's military. But I feel that that really shows Jude that I will go to extremes to make sure that he is safe and he is protected. And that's something that my dad did for me, too, when I was little. And I don't take a lot of parenting advice from him. But when I was bullied, and it did happen, he told me, you know, you don't want the school to have to deal with me. Mm-hmm. And that's what he told the school, and it stopped.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to listen to a short clip about how bullies may or should, according to a few experts, or how victims, and I know you don't like that word,
Miranda, mm-hmm.
how,
that's okay.
how kids who are bullied mm-hmm. should respond if they're picked on. And this is from an author and public speaker who did a demonstration at a school, and he says that the most effective way for people to respond is don't show emotion. Don't get upset. Mm-hmm. Don't give bullies something to react to. So I want to listen to that clip. We'll get our guest response, and we're down to our last few minutes. So callers, we will get to you as quickly as we can. Gary, Teta, Carrie, and Dan. So hang with us there. Quick clip, and then we'll talk to you. So this is an author and speaker, and I'm having trouble finding it in my notes. And once I do, I will let you know. But talking about how people who are bullied should respond.
Go and call me an idiot.
You're an idiot.
Oh, you think I'm an idiot?
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I do stupid things. That's true.
Yeah, you do. You always do stupid things.
I know. You're so smart. You're so lucky.
Yes, I am.
You're awesome.
Thank you. And you're not.
I know. We established that. Cool. Look, my happiness is not based on whether you think I'm cool or not. I'm going to be happy even if you hate my guts.
Okay.
And I'll always be nice to you, sweetheart.
Okay. No.
Isn't she lovely?
Thank you.
So, the method there is don't show emotion, don't react, be kind and be calm. Brenda, what do you think about that method?
I think that that's all really good advice. I think the clip that was shared shows a target that has really high confidence, though. Mm-hmm. And that's not always true of the targets that we're familiar with.
My first thought was, is that realistic to expect someone who is being bullied to respond in that way in that moment when emotions are high and they're feeling really vulnerable? Miranda, what do you think?
Well, I think that was a very good premise for a sitcom. I thought it was really cute, and I wish that it did work that way. But when you are feeling threatened, you're in a fight or flight state. And until you can really control that, you aren't going to be able, at a young age, to be able to do that, I don't think. And I mean, that's one of the things that we've tried to tell Jude, like, you know, be cool, agree with them, be funny, you're a funny kid, you know, use that to your advantage. And maybe he has, but I don't know, because it is less. But when it's physical, that's completely different. Mm, you can't sing. I mean, you could. I think that would be great. But I don't think it would actually really help it.
I think also it can perpetuate the negative self-esteem and the negative mm-hmm. self-concept that targets have. Because in that example, the target was owning all of those negative comments and negative beliefs about him. And that can be damaging to their mental health.
Allie, someone struggling with an eating disorder, I imagine, has to be even more difficult for them to try to respond in that way because they're struggling with, you know, I'm dealing with anorexia, I'm dealing with binge eating disorder, and this person is feeding into the vulnerabilities I have about myself. Do you find that unrealistic, that approach?
Yes. So, again, it's really ideal, and I think it would work if you had some time to think about it, maybe in if you had the moment. I think that there was a woman who did that on social media recently as well, and it had a positive effect. But if you're struggling with an eating disorder, you're so disconnected from yourself, you're so disempowered, you're at a loss in terms of how to communicate and how to speak effectively, if you were put in that situation, I feel like the majority of people that we work with would just kind of go inside of themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They would go more, and they would become more quiet, more disconnected.
Mm-hmm. We're down to our last couple minutes, and against my better judgment, I'm going to take one more phone call. This is Gary in Rochester. Gary, we got to make it quick, okay? Go ahead,
Gary. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. I think some of the conversation from what I'm hearing assumes that parents and children are rational and work under the premise of free will. However, both biology and neuroscience tells us that there are factors beyond that. For instance, you know, a certain percentage of our population are psychopathic. It almost sounds like there's a rationalization that there are no bad kids. Psychopaths come from someplace. What do you do about the kids that are just bad kids?
Okay, thanks for the question, Gary. Brenda or Ellie? I see you both want to jump in.
Go ahead, Ellie.
I was just thinking that, of course, kids and adults come with all sets of traits and all sorts of personality ways to approach the world, and certainly some are healthier than others. But I think that this conversation more is about recognizing that this is happening, bringing awareness to that, having a conversation mm-hmm. about that, and helping to support the kids and young adults that are targets of the bullying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think I can just follow up with that by emphasizing once again that the most positive contributing factor to address bullying, in my sense, is working with the bystanders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of great information from our guests. Thank you so much for sharing your personal stories. We need another hour, and I'm sitting here planning a future conversation to address some of the things that we didn't get to talk to today, some of the laws that all 50 states have about dealing with bullying, how bullies grow up and any long-term consequences they have as adults. There's a lot of research on that. So I want to invite you all back for a future conversation about those things, and thank you all. Thanks to all the callers who called. I'm sorry that we couldn't get to you, but we appreciate you being willing to share your stories as well. So thanks to Jordan Duby, Miranda Kaloji, Ellie Wilkos, and Brendan McQuillan. Thanks so much for being here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you,
Megan.
More Connections is next.